Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really interesting question in education. How much say should students actually have?
That balance, right?
Yeah. And we're using a piece by Gary Ackerman from hackscience.education as our sort of jumping off point. It's called On Student Autonomy, came out last July.
A great read.
Definitely. So, if you've ever been a student, or maybe you're a parent, or honestly, if you're just curious about how learning really works best,
It should be pretty relevant.
exactly. We're diving deep to find that sweet spot between guidance and, student control.
And Ackerman's article really frames it well. It talks about this spectrum, this continuum. It argues against the extremes.
Right. So, not total chaos where students run wild.
But also not the super restrictive teacher dictates everything classroom.
Because that can be pretty dull, pretty stifling.
Totally. The article suggests the really effective nurturing learning environment. It's somewhere in the middle.
Okay, so let's dig into that continuum idea first. Ackerman paints these two, well, pretty stark pictures at the ends.
Yeah, one end is like complete student control. They choose everything, what they learn, how they even show they've learned it.
And the potential downside there, according to the article, is, well, chaos. A bit of a free-for-all.
Could be. Maybe not hitting core concepts if everyone's just following their immediate whim, especially in subjects like science, maybe.
Yeah, you could see that. But then the other extreme, complete teacher control.
Right. Every lesson mapped out, every assignment identical. No room for student interest or curiosity.
And the article argues that's just as bad, potentially. Kills motivation, makes learning feel impersonal.
Exactly. Stifling is the word Ackerman uses, I think. It doesn't engage the student's own drive.
So the core mission here is finding that balance. And Ackerman actually points out some specific times when teachers probably should keep a tighter rein.
Yeah, which is crucial. It's not just about letting go. The first one he mentions is pretty straightforward. Safety.
Makes total sense. Labs, workshops.
Studios, yeah. Anywhere with tools or materials that could be, dangerous if not used properly.
So teacher control there isn't about limiting learning, it's about enabling it. By keeping things safe.
Precisely. You build that secure foundation first. You can't explore creatively if you're worried about accidents or actually causing damage.
It's like basic rules of the road before you go exploring. Okay, what's next? Reducing frustration.
And this is a nuanced one because obviously some struggle in learning is good. It's necessary even.
Right, that's how you grow. But there's a line.
There is. Ackerman distinguishes between that productive struggle, the kind that pushes you, and like debilitating frustration, the kind that makes you just shut down.
Okay, so the teacher's role is.
To observe, really, to see when a student is hitting that wall, not making progress, just getting overwhelmed, and then maybe step in.
Not necessarily to give the answer, but maybe teach coping strategies or just offer some guidance.
Exactly that, helping them manage the frustration so it doesn't become a total roadblock to learning.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, this next one sounds intriguing. Exceeding the bounds of knowledge.
Ah, yes. The astrology example.
Right. In a science class, walk us through that argument. What's the core idea?
Well, the article uses it to highlight a teacher's responsibility. If you're teaching science, you have a duty, basically, to teach scientific concepts, the scientific method.
Even if a student is super interested in something non-scientific, like astrology.
Right. While that interest is valid in itself, the science classroom has a specific purpose. It's about guiding students towards understanding the established knowledge within that discipline.
So it's not about dismissing the student's interest entirely,
No, not at all.
but about focus and context. Like maybe astrology fits better in a social studies class, looking at belief systems or something.
Exactly. It's about appropriateness for the context. The science class needs to focus on science. That's the teacher's responsibility within that framework.
Okay, but then the article throws in a curveball mentioning the artificiality of standards.
Yeah, that adds the layer, doesn't it?
It does. It acknowledges that teachers have to teach to standards, but also reminds us that these standards, well, they're made up by people. They aren't natural laws.
Right, they're constructs. Useful ones, hopefully, designed to ensure some consistency and coverage, but they can also be limiting sometimes.
So, how does that artificiality factor into the teacher control discussion?
I think it's a reminder that even when teachers need to exert control, maybe to meet those standards, there should still be an awareness that the standards themselves aren't the be-all and end-all. They might not perfectly align with every student's path.
So it adds nuance. Even necessary control isn't absolute. Okay, so we've talked about when teachers should control things. Let's flip it. What does actual student autonomy look like according to Ackerman?
Good question. Fundamentally, he defines it as students making decisions about their own learning. Simple enough on the surface.
But there's more to it.
Definitely. He breaks it down into two key parts. First, students need permission.
Permission, like the classroom culture has to actually allow it, value their input.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It needs to be okay for them to have a say. But crucially, they also need the capacity.
Capacity, meaning?
Meaning they need the actual skills, the knowledge, the resources to do what they want to do, to follow through on the decisions they make.
Ah, okay. So it's not just, okay, choose whatever you want. You have to equip them first.
Precisely. You can't just grant permission without building the capacity. It's about teaching them what they need, giving them the tools.
And then giving them the space and opportunity to apply it in ways that are meaningful to them.
That's the core idea. It's an integration.
Yeah.
And he argues this should happen throughout their education.
Even with really young kids, some might find that surprising.
Yeah, it pushes back on the idea that little kids just need constant, direct instruction. Ackerman suggests teachers can build in choices even early on.
Like choosing which book to read from a selection, or how to present a simple project.
Exactly. Small choices, but they build that sense of agency, that ownership, right from the start. It's about respecting that even young learners are capable of engaging with their own studies.
Okay, so what are the big wins here? Why push for this autonomy? What are the benefits the article highlights?
Well, the most fundamental one is engagement, right? When students make decisions about their learning, they're naturally more invested.
They have skin in the game.
Totally. Mm-hmm. They aren't just passive receivers. They're active participants. And Ackerman stresses that teachers should really respect that capability, even in young students.
And there's a benefit for the teacher, too, isn't there? Something about learning from the students.
Oh, absolutely. That's a huge point in the article. When you give students more control, you learn so much about them.
Like what choices they make, what interests them, how they tackle problems.
All of that. You see their thinking processes, their strengths, where they might need more support. It's invaluable feedback that helps the teacher tailor things better.
Makes the whole system more responsive. Now, the article also mentions this older term, student voice and choice. How is autonomy different?
He seems to frame voice and choice as maybe a precursor or a component. It's about giving students a say.
Yeah.
Autonomy, in Ackerman's view, feels broader. Yeah. It includes having that voice and choice, yes, but it really emphasizes having the genuine permission and the skills, the capacity to actually direct parts of your learning journey.
So it's a deeper kind of empowerment.
That's how I read it, yeah. Goes beyond just sort of voting on options provided by the teacher.
Got it. Okay, so let's recap. We've explored this idea of a continuum away from the extremes.
Uh-huh. We talked about specific necessary areas for teacher control safety, managing that really bad frustration, keeping focused within a subject like science.
Right, while also acknowledging that standards have their own limitations.
Then we defined autonomy, needing both that permission and the actual capacity, the skills to make meaningful choices.
And the benefits. More engagement, deeper learning, and teachers learning more about their students, too.
Exactly. The big picture is that it's not about choosing one approach, teacher-led or student-led. It's about this constant, thoughtful navigation between them.
Knowing when to step in and guide and when to step back and empower.
Precisely.
So for you listening, whether you're an educator, a student, a parent, or just interested in learning, hopefully this deep dive gives you a useful way to think about structuring learning environments. Trying to hit that sweet spot.
We aim to pull out those key nuggets from Ackerman's piece for you efficiently, but thoroughly.
And maybe a final thought to leave you with, something to chew on.
Mm.
If we take these ideas about autonomy, permission, and capacity outside the classroom, how do they apply to our own lifelong learning?
Interesting.
How can we be more intentional about creating those conditions for ourselves, giving ourselves permission to explore, but also making sure we build the capacity, the skills to actually learn what we want to learn effectively?
That's a great question. How do we structure our own learning for more autonomy beyond just formal schooling?
Mm-hmm.
Something to definitely mull over.